CAPSI Podcast Series, Conversations on African Philanthropy.
Welcome to yet another episode on Conversations on African Philanthropy with me, Pekinkosi Moyo. We're shooting this episode as part of a special series in Zanzibar at the margins of the East African Philanthropy Network Conference. I'm happy to be joined by Liza Marie Kawoya from the Ndwana Initiative in Uganda. Liza.
Yes.
Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I am honored to be here to have this conversation with you. I'm actually excited.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I know it's late. It's end of the conference. We've been here for 3 days. Like I said in the beginning, this is being shot at the margins of the East Africa Philanthropy Network Conference, whose focus was basically on systems change and finding pathways to impact. What's your takeaway as a participant? That I saw you were moderating some panels, but you've also been taking part in other plenaries, etc. What are your takeaways as you go back to Uganda?
I think taking this, or being here and having this experience, interacting with different people, I have gotten to understand that the value of cultivating trust through empathy, and not only taking trust as an accountability measure, but taking trust as cultivating meaningful relationships, even within the community as well. Not only at the stakeholder, partner to partner and the donors and the different people, but also within the community themselves, that they have a voice, and we need to cultivate that trust through empathy to work with them. Yeah. So that's one of the biggest takeaways I have taken.
Did you make any meaningful contacts while you are here? Usually such spaces are spaces also for networking. Did you network enough?
I think I did. I didn't come with this whole mind of, I'm going to look for a donor or something of the sort, but I like to have conversation. I like to have real conversation with people to just get to know them. And if our values align, well and good, that's amazing. But I believe that everyone needs a listening ear. Someone needs deep conversation. Someone needs to get to know them, but also for them to know you. So I did, and I think one person I had a really long conversation with was Brian Kangora. Kangoro. And it was amazing to talk to him, especially with his intellect, but also in other aspects of life. It was beautiful.
He's one of the most seasoned, I would say, personnel right now in this space, especially on African issues. But let's talk about the Ndwana Initiative that you founded. When did you found this initiative? Where and why?
I will tell you the whole story properly. So Ndwana Initiative means my voice. And the story starts in 2019. So after college, university, Makerere University, I went to volunteer with a CBO, community-based organization, in northern Uganda. So it's called Delta Education Collective in Noya District. So I was posted there at a couple of schools, and I got to experience what young girls go through, the inequalities that breed in rural communities, especially that young girls go through. And one of the biggest barriers was period poverty and stigma. Now, for those that may be listening and they have no idea what period poverty and stigma
maybe we can break
is.
It down,
Yes. So period poverty is basically not having the right resources. It could be either in terms of the pads or the products, but also the education and the facilities to help one person manage their period properly in a dignified manner. So when I was in this school, it was in this school, it's called Ongai Primary School in northern Uganda. I got to see that girls are missing school because of this issue, I felt like it was so trivial. And I was in shock because we needed to keep checking. One of the roles that we had as a community coach, we needed to keep checking on the attendance and also the performance of the children in those particular schools that we're working in. Yeah. And in this school, I got to see the fluctuations that the girls had. So I went on to ask the senior woman, Miss Asiro Mary, about why is this happening? And she's like, my daughter, this is what's happening. So the girls, when they get into the period, they don't come to school. And some of the parents just block them completely when they start from home. So she shares what she did. And this is why I love telling this story, because most people think that, we need the money to make the change. Yeah. But people in these communities are doing amazing things with so little. So this is what this woman did. She went on to tell me that, so when I noticed this problem, I spoke to the girls. I told them, here's my home. Yeah. My home is next to the school, because it's next to the school. So I'm going to give you cotton cloth. I'm going to give you jerry cans of water. You go to the borehole, you get water. You come, use my home, you change up.
Yeah.
With this is the cotton cloth.
Yeah.
And if you've started your period in school, and she did that. Now, for those that started their period at home, she would talk to the parents and told them, let me have your daughter stay with me so that the next day she can come to school. So she did that. She would talk to the parents and she did that. So those girls that she invited into her home, the number started to grow, and it meant more resources in terms of feeding them at night, and because she's picking money to get that cotton cloth from her own resources. So she would have over like 20 girls in her heart in a month.
Yeah.
Yes. And she did that. But when she did that, she saw that the class attendance rate was going up for the girls.
Yeah.
And when she shared that, and also when I saw that, because she stopped because of the resources. Yes.
Yeah.
And it just kind of died out, and then it wasn't, and then it happened again. So that's when I stepped in. I got this story and I shared it on a podcast that I host, and it's called My Voice Podcast. So My Voice Podcast basically shares experiences, personal stories of youth and adolescents around what their role is in eradicating gender-based violence, gender inequality, and poverty. What are the small steps that you're doing on a personal level? So I shared it, and I was amazed. The listeners and supporters were like, hey, let's come in and see how can we support. So we did a fundraiser.
Yeah.
I did a fundraiser, and we were able to raise 100 fem packs for those girls. But those fem packs had products that would last them for 3 years.
Wow.
So we did that. And what happened is that it was during COVID, and schools were closed. So with them being closed, Miss Mary still, the teachers within that community, because in Uganda, when the schools were closed, they went on to promote e-learning. But the e-learning was only favorable to a certain
type of people in class.
Exactly. So some areas don't have radios, they don't have TVs. But what these people in this community did is that the teachers came together and started to do cluster learning classes in small groups to those young children that were there. They gave all their time to still keep educating them within this time. So when we had the menstrual session and we brought in the products and all that, they called rural the rural girls from the different community nearby the school, but also the girls that go to that school as well to be part of it. And each one of them received the FEM pack and also an Afrocentric book that can encourage them that their dreams are valid and that their dreams are valid and they can be whoever they are they want to be. And what made my heart dance was that when we had that session and all that on Monday, because Miss Mary and the other teachers were having a big, they were having some kind of issues to pull those children to come, because most of the parents would tell them let's go to the garden and work and all that. It's COVID. So there were really few, I would say there were few of them that were coming in. But when we, after that session, she calls me and she tells me, my daughter, do you know what happened? 20 girls, extra girls have come.
Yeah.
For the cluster learning class, I have been talking to their parents and they were refusing, but they are here.
Yeah.
And trust me, I got up, I made a dance around it, and I was like, wow, that's impact.
Yeah.
That's the impact. So we went back with the volunteers that we work with, and we sat down and we said, how can we have this in different schools that are facing the same problem?
Yeah.
So we went on to develop our play-based educational model, and we use play to teach on concepts of menstruation.
Yeah.
And we use play because we believe that it's the best way children interact. They get to dissolve this context in a way that they can normalize these conversations.
Yeah.
Yes. So we do that through school menstrual hygiene management clubs. And we use different games, but also we support these clubs with free emergency fem packs, Afrocentric children's books as well, and an edu pack in these schools that we work with.
So this is the age group from what?
From about 10 to 17.
Usually about,
do that.
Okay.
Yes.
And then are you doing this in collaboration with Lego?
With
Lego.
Lego.
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
It's just local games that we developed.
I'm saying that because Lego is this concept of teaching through play.
Yes.
And it might be useful at some point maybe to connect with Lego.
Yes.
And so that you really amplify it. I mean, it really lends itself in the philosophy of Lego as well. So how widespread is this problem in Uganda? I mean, you're speaking from the perspective of the northern part of Uganda, one community. But how widespread is it?
Okay, so in Uganda, one in four girls actually drops out of school between the ages of 12 to 18 because when they start their menstruation.
Yeah.
So one in four girls, that's one, two, three, four,
right.
One
then,
is dropping out.
Yeah.
So it's 25%, which is... It's quite high.
It's
quite high. And those are, that's what some of the research has been. So there's still more that is not reported.
And what is the responsibility of government?
What government is doing, what I know, because Dwana is part of a network that's a period equality network that has really, it's a coalition of different players in this space. Because there are quite many with different innovations around it. But what this network has done is that it's pulling government's attention. And for example, the Ministry of Education and Sports, the gender unit, now actively involves in especially advocacy to see how can we come in to either have to popularize these school menstrual hygiene clubs, to popularize the conversation around menstrual hygiene. And we are seeing that it's getting traction within the country, within even from the grassroots to the government itself. So it is that they are coming in. They're getting part of it.
And so why did you opt for the name Dwana, meaning my voice, in naming the initiative?
Okay. So it stems from a personal experience from when I was younger. So at the age of four, I lost my father. Yes, and I witnessed, I would say my in-laws come in and take everything.
Yeah.
Like nothing, everything that they had built, they were taking everything.
Yeah.
And my mom had seven of us, with me being the seventh.
Yeah.
And first and foremost, she is a housewife, and my dad was the breadwinner.
Yeah.
And also, she didn't have that much of an education.
Yeah.
So, no matter how little I was, honestly, some memories are very vivid.
Yeah,
I saw my mom voiceless. I saw her fighting a battle that she was losing.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that stayed with me, and I contribute that I would say, and many other aspects and experiences that I've gathered in my life to why I am in this space. I have had experience working in educational organizations, and I have seen that through the pathway, education and entrepreneurship are powerful pathways for people to reach their fullest potential. So when I was working and I was working with this organization, and I saw that there's still those barriers. Yes, we are advocating for education, but the ecosystem within, we are trying to pull people to go to school, but there are those barriers around them that are blocking these people to do that. Because you can still ask, we have these conversations with these young girls, and they want to be someone. They want to be someone. They want to be somewhere. They have a dream. But their voices are silenced by those issues. So that's why.
Yeah. So I would just ask, has your mother found peace after this incident?
Yes, she has. Yes, she has. And yeah. She's really, a really powerful woman.
Yeah.
Because she has come to build from almost nothing to something. I mean, if we have, I think after this, when we have a coffee or something, I think you'd be amazed to what she has done. Yeah. She has started up businesses. Yeah. She's now an employer, yes, and all that. So it's amazing. And I say, yes, she has found peace.
Great to know, because the patriarchal system is always so disempowering to women, and also some of the practices just don't make sense. But glad that she has come out of it and she's doing great. And so, in your work, do you feel constrained as well?
Really?
Do you feel constrained? Do you face many barriers in what you are doing?
Do I feel constrained in the work that we do? Maybe the constraint would be, especially if the fact that we are a young organization, and when you go out, you're doing work in the community, but because you're young and some players are of a certain age, they don't take you that seriously. For example, we have on our advocacy side, which is the Power of My Voice, the program. So we have an art advocacy campaign called Let Art Be My Voice.
Yeah.
So we got an opportunity to, when I was, what we do is we use art as a tool to get commitments from the community, but also to educate on harm and abuse in our society, tailored to what form of gender-based violence that is prevalent in that community. And we talk to them, they create bylaws and all that together, but we use the tool of art. And these canvases are put, for example, on a famous mango tree in the community where they know, or a boda-boda stage, and they know that it's been the community, but plus also the community members, but also the leaders as well, that are making these commitments, and this is what they are putting out there on this issue. So before we got a partnership with the Ministry of Local Government, with support from EU UNDP, when we were sharing this idea, they were like, art, so what, they're going to paint things?
Yeah.
You're going to see big people painting things?
What
is that?
And
yet we got to see that not only at the school level, but even from the community leaders, they were able to voice out some things using art.
And art is therapeutic at most.
They were.
And how is the involvement of the corporate sector?
The corporate sector.
In what you are doing? Because a lot of it could really be, you know, taken from the corporate social responsibility budgets of most companies. Because all you're asking them for is the support and donations to just help these young girls.
Yes, so we work with Stanbic Bank Uganda, and they have really, really supported us, I would say. We've come in to work with them. They have one of their priority or thematic areas that they support is maternal health. And their involvement as well in menstrual health is coming in. So they have come in to support, but they also supported the art campaign as well. We started it through the 16 days of activism, and they've been really, really good to support.
Are there companies that are operating in the community or the area or the region that this school is located in, yes, other than Standard Bank?
Other than Standard Bank, the companies that are in that area, we haven't yet gotten collaborations with them.
Yeah, it might be useful for you and your team, yeah, and even some of your advisors to think about that, because, you know, from a corporate social responsibility point of view, companies that are located in a particular locale have a responsibility to give back to that community, and this could be one of the initiatives that you put to their doorsteps. Yeah. What about philanthropy in general?
Okay, so philanthropy in general, I would say, to me, philanthropy is giving, and not just when you talk about giving. Definitely, the first thing that comes to most people's mind is money, but to me, it's a STEM. So that skill. Your skill, your time, your effort, and your money. And that's how I would sum it up. And I really think that philanthropy is really instrumental in what we do, because we are interdependent. We can't have social change without social exchange. And our relationships really, really matter, because I would say that we are not self-sufficient. We are not self-made. We need people through our journeys. And philanthropy speaks that. It shows that we are not alone.
Yeah.
Yes. People come up together. We've grown up in communities where there's a feast and everyone comes in. Or there's a drive and they're like, okay, fine, we are going to collecting clothes for people and we're giving it to them. I recently had a conversation with one of the people that was in, I'd say distant in my childhood, but she used to open up her home for us to come in and eat and play all the time. And I met her again. It's been like, I think, over 20 years since I saw her. And I went back to her home just last Friday, and she said, wow, I'm surprised you're here, I haven't seen you, you're married and you're big, oh my god. And I'm like, yes. And I told her that whenever I go through this road, your name is here because of what you did when I was young. You opened up for us, you did that. And she asked, but that's normal. And she told me, when we were growing up, we would go to our neighbor to do this. We would call, because there was a Catholic church next to them. We would know that this person is from the Catholic community and would have lunch here, lunch there, lunch this. And that was it. But you see that philanthropy is within us. It's within the different aspects of how we've grown up, especially as Africans.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's a beautiful story, because as you can see behind you, is that banner that says Kisima African Giving Platform. We showcase stories like the one that you have just told, because everyone has a story of either giving somebody or benefiting or knowing somebody who has given to others. But I wanted to ask you, because we are about to end, I wanted to ask you about what really drives you to do this kind of work, and do you see other young people driven the way you are in Uganda?
In Uganda, so what drives me, I would say that I have a deep burning desire to have women's voices lifted. And it's just like what I shared with you about my mom. because I have seen her struggles. I have seen that. And even being in the community, even being a woman myself, I know what it is in certain parts or in certain things that we do. And it drives me to see that I'd love someone to be themselves, to be the very best versions of themselves. Yeah, and not look back and yes. And not look back and say that this limited me. This held me back.
Yeah.
So that's what drives me. Yeah. It drives me to see that impact. Because when things like that happen, let me tell you, I make those dances. Eh?
Yeah.
I really do. Yeah. When I see, for example, a bylaw has been passed in a community. Yeah.
So
or
what kind of a dance is that?
Must be Maganda. Maganda. But yes, it does. And
we're
really
interested now. We want to see how does it go? How does it look like?
I will show that one. Yes.
Okay.
But
but that's your way of celebrating.
Yes, I really, really get happy.
Yeah.
And I love that I am in this space because it connects with me deeply.
You know, I wanted to ask because the North in Uganda has gone through such a horrible time with the conflict and everything. If I'm right, the conflict is not fully over, and so these girls are not just facing the challenge that you are talking, but they are also living in this traumatic experience where there's forever that possibility of an attack. So that's really. Are you from the North yourself?
No, I am.
You're
not.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm from the central.
Okay.
Yes. And so people always think, whenever I tell them, they think, oh, are you from Ghana?
Yeah.
I'm
yeah,
not. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. But are you doing something in Central as well?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
So we started in Noya District.
Yeah.
Now we're in Mokono, Wakiso, and Kayunga.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we are in four districts.
Yeah. And your podcast, what's the name? Would you mind if we link it to your interview?
Yeah, sure. There are two podcasts. There's one under a research organization that I work for. That's the Thinking Watermelon Society. That's the AHA Media Network Africa. We just talk about, what we talk about is basically issues around women, but we amplify conversations around how women are in different sectors and what they're doing. So there's that one. And then there's also My Voice, which was the original or what birthed this.
Right.
And that one I shared is about, it just pulled different stories, but also survivor stories as well of violence and how they've gone about their healing journey on that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So if we were to speak to the philanthropy sector, the corporate, what would you want them to support you with in the journey that you have started? Because you're still a young person. Your institution is very young. You will need a lot of enabling environment, but also support as you do this amazing work. So if you were to speak to them and they are watching, what would be your message?
So, my people, what I would say is come, let's work together. Come, let's work together. And I'm not only asking for your resources, by the way, but I'm also asking for your support in mentorship. And you can come for the girls and for also the boys. We don't, by the way, exclude. But for also the boys as well, come in. Come support them. You have taken up spaces already. In you've built it yourselves. You've gone into careers. And these are young people. They look up to you. When they relate to you, when you relate with them, they aspire to be in the place that you're in. So just even sparing your time to come in and volunteer with us, work with us, it would be amazing. So that's what I would say for that. On that.
Lisa, thank you so much. I know we had to squeeze in this interview at the end of the conference, but I'm glad we made it. We've learned a lot. I mean, some of us don't know much about the northern part of Uganda, but every time, you know, we hear stories of this nature, we are moved to also find ways of supporting. So thank you so much.
Thank you too. And just about Northern Uganda, there's someone here, he's called Ojok. I don't know if you've met him.
No.
He's from Okere City. He built a sustainable model, like a whole city in a rural place. And they work on different SDGs. So if you ever have a chance to have a conversation with him. It would be beautiful.
Certainly.
Yes.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. That was Liza Amarekawoya from the Ndwana Initiative in Uganda. Thank you for watching. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to the CAPSI podcast series, Conversations on African Philanthropy.